Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich, and thanks for watching Crime Talk. We didn't do a show yesterday because I was in trial. We have a big docket, so let's get to it. First, Barry Morphew speaks. He gives his theory on Suzanne Morphew's disappearance. Second, Derek Chauvin makes bond. Third, the Breonna Taylor matter. The attorney general wants to keep the grand juror quiet. Fourth, resolution of the Mackenzie Lueck matter in Utah. Fifth on the docket, Letitia Stauch, the competency battle begins. Next, a video of a child kidnapping. You will not have your child leave your side after watching this. Next on the docket, Netflix American Murder, the family next door is helping that guy named Chris's dating life. Next, Jacob Blake is out of the hospital. How about a little summary of my trial that just took place in federal court and explain how we won? And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich, and you're watching Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel and podcast out there on the web. Thanks for watching. First, I want to thank everyone. We just went over 140,000 subscribers. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We could not do this without you. Now, first, if you haven't already subscribed, please do that and hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. First on the docket, Barry Morphew speaks. That's right. He's giving his theory about what happened to his wife, Suzanne Morphew. And how did he do it? Well, he invited a Denver channel to his home, but he refused for it to be videotaped. Now, he states that his wife, Suzanne Morphew, who disappeared on May 10th, he believes that she has been abducted. And the reason why he needs to sell his home up there near Salida, Colorado, is the fact that his daughters are terrified to return to the house, and the family has been renting a nearby residence over the last several weeks. Mr. Morphew also stated that due to the extensive media coverage in this particular case, he's being recorded against his will, and he has curious strangers wandering onto his property. Mr. Morphew did discuss the fact that he has been criticized by his brother-in-law, Andy Mormon, who believes, in fact, that he may be a person of interest. And as always, we give everyone the presumption of innocence, and no charges have been filed against Barry Morphew at all. Now, Andrew Mormon, the brother-in-law, organized a search for his sister, and Barry Morphew did not participate. Barry Morphew states that the reason why he didn't join in the search is because he had already spent months doing the exact same thing with close friends, and he no longer believes that she is in the area. Barry Morphew also states that Mormon never reached out to him directly about the search despite repeated attempts to contact him personally. Barry Morphew did share with the reporter a note that Suzanne wrote for him in February for Valentine's Day. It's the last note he states that he has from her. And it states, quote, "Just want you to know my life would be nothing without your love and the excitement you bring to our marriage and my life. All my love, Suzanne." Barry Morphew also provided other notes allegedly written by Suzanne Morphew about the time that they first met and as well as her discovery of cancer. Barry Morphew states that he still clings to hope and has faith that Suzanne Morphew is still alive somewhere. He further states that he has opened his home and his property to investigators, as well as his cell phone records, as well as his computers. He further states that he has sat through countless days of interrogations, and despite media reports, does not have a lawyer. And apparently, Suzanne's daughters have started a GoFundMe page to aid in the search for their mother. We will bring you the facts as they develop as it relates in the Suzanne Morphew case. Obviously, Barry Morphew has been given some bad press and some serious allegations have been leveled against them, of which he has denied. Obviously, he's given the presumption of innocence. Now this information has come out regarding his theory of what has happened, and he provides this information. You decide. Let me know what you think of the fact that he wouldn't go on camera, and is this all sincere, or is it an attempt to gain some sympathy? Let me know in the comments below. Next on the docket, the most unpopular former police officer in the world, Derek Chauvin, is out on bond on a $1 million non-cash bond. What does that mean? It means somebody had to post collateral worth $1 million, and somebody had to pay at least probably 7 to 10% of a bond to get him out, which was roughly $70,000 to $100,000. As a condition of bond, Derek Chauvin cannot obviously engage in any work as a police officer, cannot leave the state, and have no contact with any of the alleged victims' families. Needless to say, the Floyd family lawyer, Mr. Ben Crump, issued a statement and is not happy, but he's happy that the due process that is afforded to each defendant has worked for Mr. Chauvin. Obviously, the due process that Mr. George never received, according to Mr. Floyd's family, through their attorney. It's unclear exactly where in the great state of Minnesota that Derek Chauvin will reside, but his next court date is not set until March 8th of 2021. Next on the docket, the Breonna Taylor matter. The Kentucky Attorney General has filed a motion to silence the Breonna Taylor grand juror. Now, as we may recall, there were not any indictments as it related specifically to the death of Breonna Taylor as the matter was presented before a Kentucky grand jury. The attorney general in that case, Mr. Daniel Cameron, made his conclusions made and a reason as to why the charges were not filed related to the officers suspected in the death of Breonna Taylor. Needless to say, a lot of people were not happy with those particular proceedings and the lack of charges that came forth specifically as to Breonna Taylor. There were protests and there were riots regarding that particular decision around the country as well as in Louisville. Shortly after that decision, a grand juror went to the courts through an attorney to be able to come out and discuss the charges that were presented as well as other matters not specifically related to the grand jury. In response to that request, the Attorney General, Daniel Cameron, agreed to comply with the court's order to release the grand jury material discussing the evidence that was in fact presented. Now, we contacted the Attorney General's office and we were able to obtain all of the audio recordings of the grand jury proceedings. We have them on a playlist right below. Listen to those. Once again, we're bringing you the information and you can decide for yourself. As I told you the other day, part of my homework is to go through and listen to all of the audio. I'm not all the way through it, but what I have listened to, I haven't seen or heard anything that looks suspicious in any way. The Attorney General stated that grand jury proceedings are rarely made public. Absolutely true. Now, Breonna Taylor's family and their attorney has said that the presentation of the grand jury findings left out significant information, and what evidence was shown to the grand jury may have changed what was in fact recommended for charges. The some 15 hours of recordings, they do not include the charging recommendations that were presented to the grand jury because the audio recordings only show what evidence was considered. Not the recordings do not include the charging recommendations that were presented to the grand jury because they are not considered evidence. That's the statement coming from the Attorney General's office of Mr. Cameron. Cameron has said that he did not recommend murder charges against the two officers involved in the death because their position was that they were in the home lawfully pursuant to a warrant and that they were being fired upon and they returned fire. And Ms. Breonna Taylor was shot one fatal shot, although she was struck some seven times. We'll continue to follow this. Frankly, I don't think the grand jury is going to get permission to discuss what took place in the proceedings because, frankly, the whole purpose of the grand jury proceedings is to be able to protect the identity of witnesses as well as the grand jurors so that charges can be brought without fear of reprisal. Next on the docket, there's been resolution of the Mackenzie Lueck matter in Utah. The accused killer of University of Utah student Mackenzie Lueck has pled guilty to aggravated murder, abuse, or desecration of a human body in a plea agreement that would avoid him the death penalty. Ayula Ajaya, 32, was initially charged with aggravated murder, kidnapping, obstruction of justice, and desecration of a human body in this particular case. The kidnapping and the obstruction of justice charges were dropped. Now, Lueck, a 23-year-old nursing student, went missing in June of 2019 after landing at the Salt Lake City International Airport following a visit to relatives in California. She is believed to have met Ajaya in a park where she was never heard from again. Cell phone records put Ajaya and Lueck at the park at the same time, and detectives tracked Ajaya's phone to his home after Lueck's had been turned off. Ajaya was arrested after a search of his home uncovered charred personal items belonging to Lueck as well as human tissue. Further tracking of Ajaya's cell phone data put the police in early July in Logan Canyon, about 85 miles north of Salt Lake City. Lueck's body had been burned, her arms tied behind her back with zip ties and rope. Lueck died of internal bleeding as a result of blunt force trauma. Now, late last year, Ajaya was ordered to stand trial on charges that he had sexually assaulted a woman he met on a dating app in March of 2018. The woman came forward after reading news stories about the Lueck matter. Ajaya initially pled not guilty to those charges, but then changed his plea to guilty as part of a plea agreement with prosecutors. Now, Ajaya has continuing issues with the law because he still has a case pending for child pornography. When the police searched his computer, they found some inappropriate pictures on his computer. Let's take a quick recess from the docket. All right, if that particular case doesn't scare the hell out of meeting anyone online in a park for any purpose, I don't know what is. People, you need to know with whom you're going to be dealing with. The best way to do that is run a background search. Go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up. Yes, there's a fee, but then you can search anonymously as many people as you would like as long as you have a subscription. And when you do that, you're going to get a report. Now, some of the reports are rather thick. Literally, I think the last one we did was about 70 pages. This one is about 7 pages on a particular individual. But you get all kinds of information regarding their personal information, associated with family members, neighbors, addresses, assets, financial information, which could include bankruptcies, liens, judgments, evictions, foreclosures, if they have professional licenses, work and business information, traffic violations, criminal history, you name it, and even most importantly, marital records. Go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy that you did. Next on the docket, the Letitia Stauch matter. For those of you who do not recall, Letitia Stauch is accused of the murder of Gannon Stauch, her 10-year-old stepson. Well, she's been charged with first-degree murder in regards to that death, and she has been comped by doctors at the request of the defense, saying that she is not competent to proceed. The first evaluation was completed, and the doctors that did the evaluation have stated that she is, in fact, competent. The defense has ordered a second evaluation to take place, and those are in fact proceeding. But where things get rather interesting is that in this particular case, the 30 hours of evaluation that took place regarding Letitia Stauch were in fact recorded. Now, you may think, what's the big deal, right? Well, the big deal is that the public defenders who are representing Letitia Stauch have said that the change in the law regarding competency evaluations no longer permit the recording of the evaluations related to the competency proceedings. So the court hasn't made any decision yet on whether he's going to consider or even allow the video to be turned over to the prosecution and the defense. It's being held in a sealed envelope in the court file, and no one can have access to it until the court has both sides brief the issue. And what's at issue is an amendment to a statute here in Colorado regarding competency. Specifically, there was a new bill introduced in 2016, and that bill was to require court-ordered mental condition examinations be video and audio recorded. That bill eventually became law in 2017, and the statute states, an interview conducted in any case that includes a Class 1 or 2, Class 2 felony pursuant to this section of the statute must be video and audio recorded and preserved. This section pertains to mental condition examinations or insanity examinations. Well, what's the significance of that? That's mental condition or insanity examinations. That's for not guilty by reason of insanity. This was a competency evaluation. So the public defenders are arguing that the changes to the competency statute in 2016 and 2020 did not include an amendment like the insanity statute that required insanity examinations be video and audio recorded. The public defenders argue that the court may not add words to the statute, right? We've talked about that. Textualists, the court must read the statute's words as written and in context. And if the legislature had intended to permit the video and audio recordings of competency evaluations, they would have included this amendment in the competency statute in 2016 when they added this language to the insanity statute. And therefore, the public defender's office is objecting to the use of any video and audio recordings of Ms. Stauch's competency evaluation in this case because it's not permitted by statute. Now, that is a very interesting issue. Now, so what happened next? Like all good attorneys, you argue everything for the best interest of your client. First, in this particular case, they argued to Letitia Stauch that what they do in this particular case, the attorneys argued everything they could in the best interest of their client. And that first argument is nobody should be able to have access to those videos, right? Because they're not permitted by statute. But then the defense turns around and files a motion to say, hey, we want the expert for the second competency evaluation to review the video recordings of the first competency evaluation that we filed, saying that nobody should actually see that information, but that information may help the second evaluator make a decision in this particular case. And the judge in this particular case then issued an order regarding that request, and it was rather clear. The motion is denied. The prior competency evaluation of the defendant was video recorded pursuant to the request of the people. The defendant did not raise an objection to that procedure at the time. The defendant has since filed her D-19 motion challenging whether the competency evaluation should have been videotaped and whether it should have been disclosed to the prosecution. The court has ordered that the video remain sealed and not viewed by the people until the resolution of the defendant's Defense 19 motion. And if the court grants the defendant's D-19 motion, the video will remain sealed and not viewed by the people. On the other hand, if Dr. Grimmett were to view the video of the competency evaluation, that video would be subject to release to the people in the event the competency became a contested issue or Dr. Grimmett were to testify on some matter. If the defendant wishes to withdraw her Defense 19 motion and agree that the people may view the previously recorded competency video, she may notify the court. Otherwise, the court will not permit the video to be used for any purpose until the D-19 motion is resolved. So, Judge Werner laying it out there rather clearly, hey, defense, nice effort, but you can't have your cake and eat it too. But that's good lawyering, although there may be an issue as it relates to 35C, ineffective assistance, if that videotape does in fact get turned over to the prosecution, because the defense didn't object to it at the time. That's why, ladies and gentlemen, attorneys object. You object early, you object often to preserve your record. But the defense did get some release because they asked for more hours to pay for their expert to do the evaluation instead of the mere 10 hours that would normally take. They believe that it's going to take at least 30 hours. So the defense got some relief. We'll continue to watch the Letitia Stauch case. It's going to be super interesting. And these are the type of issues that lawyers deal with on a daily basis that affect types of clients that go through the criminal justice proceeding. And all those attorneys are out there fighting every day and reading the statutes and making arguments to the judge. It's super exciting stuff. Next on the docket, video of a child kidnapping. I kid you not. And if this does not scare the hell out of you, and if you have a young child, you are never going to let them leave your sight ever again. Take a look at this video. A man by the name of Luis Martinez Romero was arraigned on charges of kidnapping a minor as well as second degree sexual assault. He is accused of kidnapping a 9-year-old girl, and now he's being held without bail. Now, fortunately, within 24 hours, the police were able to catch the suspect, who they say kidnapped a girl who had just got off her school bus. And once again, fortunately, home surveillance video shows Martinez Romero taking the girl into his car just after 3 p.m. after the girl had been dropped off not far from where she was actually taken from. The police determined that Mr. Martinez Romero allegedly took the girl to Burger King. That's where a tip came in Tuesday night regarding the location where they could find Mr. Martinez Romero. This video will leave you not wanting your children to walk alone anywhere. This is the kind of stuff your mom always told you to be leery about, but look how quickly this can happen. Mr. Martinez Romero literally jumps out of his car, has his mask on, you know, for social distancing and preventing the spread of COVID, but in the meantime, literally abducts a 9-year-old girl and throws her in the car. Ladies and gentlemen, be cautious. Watch your children. It can happen to anyone. It can happen at any time. Hopefully this young girl will be okay. Next on the docket, Netflix American Murder, The Family Next Door, is helping that guy named Chris, is helping keep his dating life busy. That's right. Days after it was reported that the guy named Chris was triggered by the reality that there is a new show about the depths of his depravity, has hit a new low. That's right. People close to this guy named Chris have told the press that he's been communicating with women who feel sorry for him and, of course, think that he's rather handsome. And apparently, this guy named Chris says, hey, I've got nothing else to do. I can simply write back and forth. Now, as we all know, this guy named Chris was pled guilty to committing the death of his wife, Shanann, as well as his two young daughters and unborn child. He's never going to get out of prison. He's not going to get any post-conviction relief, bottom line. And I understand, for some reason, a lot of women like to communicate with people in jail. Maybe it's the kind of relationship you get. Maybe you get that back and forth comfort, so to speak, without ever actually having to touch or be with somebody. I guess distance makes the heart grow fonder. personally, ladies, I would ask that you maybe go find someone that you could actually date, maybe someone that actually buy you dinner, maybe open the car door for you, something along those lines, versus a guy who's never going to get out of prison. And oh, by the way, he pled guilty to killing his wife, unborn child, and two small girls. I get maybe there's some intrigue as to what psychologically makes him tick, but guess what? What if he got tired of hanging out with you and he got the opportunity? Don't you think he'd probably do something just like that again if he could? Past performance is indicative of future results. Ladies, be careful. Remember Jacob Blake? That's right. He is the young man who was shot several times by a Kenosha, Wisconsin police officer when he refused to cooperate with the police. In fact, was in a tussle with them, shouldn't have been at a residence of his ex-girlfriend, and has since been charged with sexual assault. Well, actually, he was charged with that before the officers made contact with him, because that's one of the reasons why he shouldn't have been at the apartment. Needless to say, Mr. Blake broke free from the officers, was going to his car, where the police ultimately found a knife that was on the floorboard, and the police officer shot him some seven times. Now, not exactly the best use of force, I think one could reasonably argue. However, it's unlikely that the officer involved will in fact be charged. The officer has only been placed on administrative leave at this point. But Mr. Blake, we can report, has been removed from the hospital, and he is at an spinal injury rehabilitation center in Chicago. Now, he still has to make his court appearances, which are scheduled for October 21st, because he's on a $10,000 personal recognizance bond for the charges related to the alleged assault that preceded the shooting. Now, next on the docket, how about a little talk about the federal trial that I just did? Well, this is only my second trial all year. Why? Because of COVID. When was my last trial? It was in federal court back in late February, I believe, or early February, January. I can't even recall exactly when it was. But my client in that particular case was charged with showing up at a large drug transaction. The federal agents, the government snitch, as well as the gentleman that set up the arrangement, stated that my client was in fact there. The jury was not convinced with the government's evidence, which was required to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt, and that particular client went not guilty. Now, I can assure you I've won trials in federal court. I've lost a couple as well. In fact, the government has a 98% chance of success in the federal system, which is much higher than the state system for sure. But the trial we did just the other day, and my client gave me permission to generally talk about the case, was that a gentleman was charged with a gun violation. That's right, a prohibited person, i.e. a felon in possession of a firearm. Well, in this particular case, the gentleman was pulled over based upon an allegation by an undercover officer who said that the man allegedly solicited her. Needless to say, the police then came in, were more concerned about seizing the car for forfeiture purposes, which is a whole different story in and of itself, than they were in collecting evidence. A firearm was found in the car, not under the seat, but actually in a back seat. No care or precaution was taken place as it related to the collection of evidence. In fact, the evidence didn't get turned in until the following day. When we got to trial, the United States attorneys did not bring the appropriate witnesses to court where they alleged they would have presented evidence regarding DNA evidence on the magazine of that particular firearm. We obviously thought that who cares if a firearm had DNA that was found in the back seat? DNA gets around everywhere, particularly in your own car. It's like finding DNA in your house. How shocking. Well, needless to say, they never got to the DNA. My client, after presenting no evidence whatsoever on behalf of the defense, a jury came back and promptly found my client not guilty. We love those kinds of wins, ladies and gentlemen, because I assure you, I hate losing even more than I like winning. We like to win. Congratulations to my client. He deserves it. He has a lot of guts. I'm not sure a lot of clients would have been able to stand the pressure. And he stated that going to trial was, in fact, the most pressure and stress he has ever felt in his life. And I assure you, I've won some big matters for this particular individual over the years, frankly, where he was facing more time. And he said trial was absolutely terrifying. Now, next on the docket are dumb criminal contestants of the day. And today, we've got two. Has anyone ever heard of a children's song called Baby Shark? Take a listen to this. Oh my God, that's terrible. Well, guess what? Two former Oklahoma detention officers and their supervisor were charged with conspiracy and multiple counts of cruelty towards an inmate. The court records allege that former jailers Kristen Miles, Gregory Butler, and Christopher Hendershot, a now retired lieutenant, abused four male inmates by handcuffing them to a wall in a standing position for an extended period of time, while at the same time playing, by playing Baby Shark loudly. The Baby Shark song would be played on a continuous loop from her computer adjacent to the visitation room. None of the inmates appeared to be combative, according to the probable cause affidavit. After an investigator learned of irregularities related to jailhouse activities, it was confirmed by now former jailer Miles, where he confirmed in an interview that he had systematically worked together to discipline inmates and to teach them a lesson because they felt disciplinary action within the detention center was not working in correcting the behavior of the inmates, whereupon they decided to torture inmates. Now, that particular officer is not the one set to make policy. He's there to simply follow the rules. And these three officers, although we may say in jest, they're playing a child song to torture inmates, this is the type of situation where you can't abuse the inmates. You simply can't do that. Well, these former officers have now joined the club of their contestants of the Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Week here on Crime Talk. Now, Mr. Miles, Butler, and Hendershot, if you are in fact found to be the Dumb Criminal Contestant winner of the week, that's right, you're going to get a coffee mug. And we're not going to make you all three share it. No, no, no. I know you guys like to hang out together and all, but nope, we'll send you each a mug if you're selected. And if you would like Crime Talk merchandise, specifically a mug or anything else, go to the link below and you can get your merchandise, and you don't even have to be a Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Day. Now, thanks for watching. It was a long docket today, but I owed you from yesterday. I felt bad that we didn't get a docket up, but when you're in trial, you just don't have time always to do the things that you really want to do. So thanks for taking the time to watch. The fact that you take time out of your busy day to watch Crime Talk does not go unappreciated. Thank you very much, and we'll see you tomorrow on Crime Talk.